Blog Talk Radio.
Ichiamo Afurakanu Afurai Kaitnut Neye Ujira Da Medinde Ujirapo Kwesi Ra Nehem Bata Akan Akwamumaina Marukai Tipi Mu Ujirapo. It means greetings to all Afurakani Afurai Kaitni people, meaning Africans, black people. Today is Ujira Day. My name is Ojirapo Kwesi Radnehem Bata Akan of the Akwamu Nation in North America. So again, we're back on Ben Adan on Tuesday with our Ojira program. We're going to, I want everybody to check out the documents that we sent out. The first one is, you can go to the website, you can go to the ojirapo.com website, download this document, The Divine Prohibition Against Dissexuality, Homosexuality, and Ancient Kemet. And you can go to odirafo.com, O-D-W-I-R-A-F, as in free, O.com. You can scroll down past the introduction and so forth, and you'll get to that. It's near the bottom. On the same page, you're also going to download the Kukutuntun, the Ancestral Jurisdiction. That particular page, there's a link to the page, also a link to the book, the front cover of the book, Kukutuntum, 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 the Ancestral Jurisdiction. Download that as well. And we're going to address those two particular documents in the context of the text and the discussion. All right, and for a couple of announcements while we're getting everything started, for those who, if you're in the chat room and you want to make a comment, you have to actually log in order to interact in the chat room. If you don't have an account, you can sign up rather quickly to get a username in a couple of minutes. Also, on the phone, for people on the phone line, if you want to make a comment or have a question, just hit the number 1 so we can see that your hand is raised, and then we can answer the question. All right, so hold on 1 second. We just want a couple of messages we got. Just want to go through them real quick. A couple of announcements. So we had a presentation this past Memenida Saturday in Baltimore. It was a good exchange with the brother in the Paratunturu, brother Nechenev. We appreciate him and the family allowing us to come to the facility, come to the shrine, and exchange that information. We were able to give away free copies of 2 of our books, one, Afuraka, Afuraikai, The Origin of the Term Africa, and then Maranechi, Divine Law, Love, and Divine Hate. So we were able to give away free copies of those from people who attended, and left a few for people who weren't able to make it. It was a few people who had contacted us who weren't able to make it. They were going to try to make it, but they weren't able to. So some of those people we were able to leave some books for, so maybe they'll be able to connect with the brother at some point soon and get those. Also, we will be scheduling another event in Baltimore soon. We will be updating our website soon. So just always check periodically. You can check on the direct ojirafo.com website, O-D-W-I-R-A-F as in free, O.com. You can also check our social network that we have. Excuse me, it's afuraka-afuraikaet.ning.com. It's a private social network on the Ning platform where you can join the network, create a profile, engage in discussions, watch videos, blogs, read information. People have a lot of different information. A number of people have posted information over the years. So many of the questions you may have, people may have already had a discussion about that, a lively discussion back and forth, posted videos or blogs or articles or various information, various forms of information on the site. So we always update the members on that site whenever something comes up immediately. We always post things on our website. Of course, we're also on Facebook at afuraka.afurayakayet. That's the username on Facebook, afuraka, afurayakayet. We always update. We have a group on Facebook, Akanfo Nanason, which is ancient, authentic, Akan ancestral religion. So we always post any updates right away on those platforms, on the Facebook platform and the Ning site, Ning platform, as well as our regular website. So just check periodically, and you'll see the different dates. The next date we have coming up in Baltimore, we'll post that. We do have a tentative date for a presentation in Philly on August 9th, so we'll be posting details about that. We also rescheduled the event for this weekend. So this weekend, Saturday, Memenida, July 19th, we are moving that date up for that particular event. We are looking at the August 16th weekend, that Saturday, for that event, which is a Nanason event. We're going to be teaching our Nanason in Las Vegas, Nevada. We're moving that date up, so most likely it will be August 16th. But we will confirm that, and we'll know within the next couple of days, and then we'll put that information out. So for everybody who was planning to come to the event, please share the information with the people in the Nevada and Arizona areas who are going to come out. If we haven't been able to reach them already, we are moving the date up, and most likely it will be on the 16th, but it will be in that around that time. So, but of course, it is a free event, free presentation. We will be giving our free copies of one of our books, and of course, we will have our other books available, the soft cover version. Okay, and before we get started, because we have a number of people in the chat room and on the phone line, for the new people who just got on, if you have a question or a comment, hit number one on the phone line to raise your hand. If you want to connect in the chat room, you have to log in to connect in the chat room. Okay. All right, so let us, what we're going to deal with, the 42 enunciations of Ma'at, and then, of course, the origin of the fictional character, Moses, of course, who never existed of any race whatsoever at all, just the same as Abraham, Isaac, Ishmael, Jacob, Esau, Moses, Aaron, David, Solomon, Sheba, Menelik, Jesus, Yeshua, Yeshua ben Pandera, Muhammad, Bilal, Allah, Yahweh, Brahman, Buddha, all of these characters are absolutely 100% fictional cartoon characters who never existed of any race whatsoever. In the Kukutuntun, the ancestral jurisdiction, which is, you can download, of course, the PDF book version of the book. We also have that book in soft cover. That is a full transcript. The 80-page book is a full transcript with additional information, supportive information, full transcript of the original 3-CD set, which is also in the form of MP3 files on our website. You can download the entire set for free. It's total 2 hours and 39 minutes. Originally, it was 3 CDs, and you know, we placed it on our website in the form of MP3 files, audio files, for free download. And then, of course, the entire transcript plus additional information we publish in the form of a soft cover book, but we also have the ebook version. The ebook version, which is PDF, is a free download, which you can download now because we're going to get into that. So in the Kukutuntun, we talk about not only the cosmological foundation of creation, the nature of the deities, the ancestresses and ancestors, the Abosom, the deities, Orisha, Vodou, Ntoru, Ntorutu, so-called Neturu, Netutu, the deities, the forces of nature, and also the Nananum, Nsamanfo, the ancestresses and ancestors who are honorable, Egungun, Kubito, Kulito, Aku, Akutu, the honorable ancestresses and ancestors, their relationship to us, the divine order of things, the divinity that dwells within the head region, the Ka and the Kayat and so forth. But we also go into detail, which was like the CDs 2 and 3, which are in the MP3 files as well, of course, going into detail, proving conclusively that these various biblical and Quranic Talmudic characters never existed at all. And we show how they were manufactured and when they were manufactured and what deities from ancient Kemet, specific descriptive titles were taken and corrupted and sometimes just straight plagiarized, and functions in nature that these divinities operate, manifest, and the aspects of nature they operate through, and how these stories were manufactured from fragments of this information to create fictional characters, patriarchs, and so forth who never existed, and place these fictional cartoon characters in Palestine, and then these characters were represented to us or represented to us as real and little characters we should be following. And some fools will try to tie their blood circle back to these fictional cartoon characters, which is no different than trying to tie your blood circle back to the Tooth Fairy or to Santa Claus, even though, of course, some Negroes say Santa Claus was a Moor. So, and they try to tie their blood circle back to him, which is nonsense. So some of our people are engaged in that process. So the Kukulkan goes into detail to expose that information. So this is one of the reasons we're getting into that tonight, because a couple of portions of it deal with the origin of the fictional character Moses, the whole notion of the lawgiver and all that nonsense, and the Ten Commandments and so forth. So the 42 enunciations of Ma'at, which can be found in various texts of ancient Kemet. This is just a title of these 42 statements or admonitions, but it's more to these 42 than what is commonly taught. Very often people say, well, the 42 laws of Ma'at or negative confessions or declarations of innocence or admonitions of Ma'at and so forth are like 42 commandments, and this is where they stole the Ten Commandments from. Now, it is true. This is where they stole the Ten Commandments from and manufactured the whole little story. That story about Moses going up on the mountain, meeting with the deity, and so forth, is totally stolen, totally lifted from the text of ancient Kemet found in the Book of the Cow of Heaven. And we're going to get into that into some detail. But the 42 laws of Ma'at, as they are called, or enunciations of Ma'at, as we would say, because they're actual invocations, are more than just a list of laws. We must understand our culture, understand our ancestral religion. If we don't embrace Afurakani, Afuraikaitni, meaning African ancestral religion, and of course the origin of the term Africa, Ka means land, high land, the first land that existed, that was created by the supreme being through the agency of the creator and creatress at the beginning of the first landmass rising up out of the primordial ocean that covered the earth's surface. The first landmass to rise up, the high land, is called Ka, which is a male title. Kaet is a female title. Ra and Raet are the creator and creatress. When they move through matter, they take on the terms or titles Afura and Afuraet. So when Afura moved through the first Ka, first landmass, that Ka becomes the Ka of Afura, Afura Ka, the land, Ka of Afura, the creator. And the feminine title of that same landmass is the Kaet, the high land of Afuraet, the creatress, because Ra and Raet, as Afura and Afuraet move through their energy, the divine living energy permeates, penetrates, and enlivens that first landmass and makes it fertile. It was their energy that forced that landmass up above the surface of the water, causing earthquakes on the ocean floor, causing the first landmass of earth to surge up and break through the surface of the water. That's why it's called the high land, the Ka, the Ka, a high land, a raised land. And when Ra and Raet move through that landmass, they are called Afura and Afuraet, and this is the Ka and Kaet of Afura and Afuraet, which is Afura Ka, Afuraet Kaet, the divine land, the land of the creator, land of the creatress. So we have an entire book that breaks that information down conclusively. We show the Medutu, the hieroglyphics, and so forth that prove that, as well as we show the cosmology that supports that information in detail. from ancient Kemet, Kanit, which is Nubia, as well as any Akan culture and language. And we also show some connections to other languages as well on the continent to prove that point, which we have done. So when we're talking about Afurakani, Afurakaini, or African, Black, Afurakani, Afurakaini, ancestral religion, we use the term Nanasom, which encompasses the reality of Afurakani, Afurakaini, ancestral religion. So instead of saying African ancestral religion, African traditional religion, African spirituality, African traditional spirituality, African ancestral spirituality, you can use all those various terms, or what the term we use is Nanasom, and we've defined that on our website as a term that ancestrally is derived from the language of ancient Kemet. Nana means great, precious, seeds, grains from the beginning, ancestry, and som means to ritually provoke. So Nanasom is to ritually provoke they who are great, ancient, wise, beautiful. The seed of the universe is Amen and Amenet, the great father and great mother called Inyame and Inyamewa in the Akan tradition, Lisa and Mawu and Vodun, and so forth. And also the Abosom and Nananom and Samampo, which are the Orisha and the Agungun, Vodu and Kubito, and the deities and the ancestral spirits. So we invoke them to harmonize with divine order. And so we harmonize with the supreme being through the agency of the deities and the ancestral spirits. That's the order of creation. Afurakani, Afurakai, the ancestral religion, the term we use, Nanasom, is in essence the ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance. That's what real religion is. Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hebrewism, Hinduism, Taoism, Buddhism, Hermeticism, Kabbalism, Sufism, pseudo-Native American spirituality, pseudo-New Age spirituality, all of these things are not religious. They are corrupted fragments, perversions of fragments of our religious tradition. But they are not qualified as religion. The only thing that is qualified as religion, Nanasom, Afurakani, Afuraikani, meaning African ancestral religion, whether it takes the form or expression of Akan, Yoruba, Ebe, Maasai, Fula, traditional Fula, Lotsi, Tswana, whatever group from the continent is, we all are connected genetically, we're all connected spiritually, we're all connected culturally, even though we have various expressions of the culture, we still fundamentally harmonize with the great mother and the great father through the agency of the deities and the ancestral spirit. That's what religion is. And even when it comes to America, because we were taken to America, North, Central, South America, the Caribbean, and Europe, and we continue to practice our ancestral religious traditions from ancient Kanit and Kemet, which is Nubian and Egypt, through West and Central and South, Afuraka, Afurakai, in these various forms, various ethnic groups we spoke of, and then we were taken from those regions, some of us, and forth into the Western Hemisphere. We continued these practices in North America. We continued the same practices that are thousands of years old in the form of hoodoo in Alabama and Georgia and Mississippi and Louisiana, in the form of voodoo, in the form of juju, in Jamaica in the form of obia, in Cuba in the form of lukumi and various other traditions, of course in Haiti in voodoo, and South America, candomblé, prior to the white corruption and invasion. So we continue these same traditions across the board. If you do not embrace and live Afurakani, Afurakaini, ancestral religion, whatever expression it takes, you will not and cannot understand the culture of ancient Kanit, Nubian, ancient Kemet. At best, you'll be a reporter. A reporter can listen to what somebody says and report what they say, or read something that somebody wrote and then report and effectively transmit what was written. That's a reporter. No different than a parrot that can repeat the words of a human being but not understand what the human being is actually saying. Or like a recorder or recording something on your iPhone, you can pick up the sound vibrations and replay them to someone. But you don't understand if you're just a reporter. It's nothing wrong with reporting information as a true story and to a certain extent, getting accurate information and sharing it with our people. But if you're going to understand the ancestral religion, the culture of Apuraikani, Apuraikani people is rooted in the religion. It is animated by the religion. There are a lot of Negroes who want to pretend like we didn't have ancestral religion, that we were atheists or we were metaphysicians and other kinds of nonsense. That's pure foolishness. That's just a new way to embrace the insane notion of white supremacy all over again. We just have never left that alone. In reality, our people were invoking the Abosom, the deity. The Akan term for deity, spirit forces in nature, is Abosom, which comes from Mosu in ancient Kemet, which means offspring of the supreme being. It's a term for divinities. One of the terms for divinities, Mosu or Mbosu in ancient Kemet, became Abosum in the Akan language. Orisha in the Yoruba language, Vodou, and so forth. It's also, of course, Ntorotu, gods and goddesses in ancient Kemet. That same terminology with the same vocalization, Ntoro, meaning divinity, deity, can be found in the Akan language as well. Also as Trowo in the language of Fong and Hebe in Vodun. So we invoke the forces in nature, the children of the supreme being. The deities are the embodiments of divine order in creation. It's like you have a spirit that animates your body. Animals, cats, dogs, lions, lionesses, crocodiles, they are spirits that are animating the physical body. Plant life lives and dies, trees and so forth, they have spirits that animate their bodies, and when they die, the spirit departs, and therefore the tree withers or the grass withers. Spirits animating physical bodies. The Earth Mother is a great physical body, of course. We are just specks on the body of this great Earth Mother, and there are two major Earth Mother divinities, Asaseafu and Asaseya, in our Akan culture called Asaset Nebetepet and Asaset Nebetet, the wives of Atim and Kepra in ancient Kemet. These are the same Asaseafu and Asaseya in Akan culture, the Earth Mother divinities. These are spirits that animate the physical body of the Earth Mother. The oceans are physical bodies, but there are spirits that animate the ocean, spirits that animate the rivers, mountains, the sun, moon, planetary bodies, stars, the black substance in space, and so forth. These are the forces in nature. They are the children of the great divine father, great divine mother, Amen and Amenet, or Nyame, Nyamewa. They are the organs within the great divine body. Just like your organs regulate order in your physical body and they are children of your great body, the organs within the great divine body of Amen and Amenet, Nyamewa, are the deities. They are the children, the offspring. They are the embodiments of divine order in the created universe, and they regulate order in creation. And we are children of those organs. We are the cells within the organs, and the organs are the beings within the great body, which is the supreme being's body. We invoke the Abosom. We invoke the Orisha. We do that now. We do it in hoodoo, we do it in voodoo, we do it in juju, we do it in obia, we do it in candomblé, in lukumi, minus the white perversions. We do it all across Apuraka, Apuraikai, wherever black people are in the world, whether we migrated to Papua New Guinea, migrated to the subcontinent in India, southern China, wherever black people migrated to Australia, we continue to invoke the forces of nature, we continue to experience spirit possession when a force of nature gets in the body of our people and bodies of our people and speak to the people, heal the people and so forth, teach us, show us about nature, show us about medicine, how to procure medicine from the natural world and so forth, engaging engineering projects and so forth, how to learn the laws that undergird creation so we can replicate that and establish civilization. We learn from the Abosom, from the forces of nature, as well as the ancestresses and ancestors who are honorable. We have been engaged in this process for hundreds of thousands of years. Of course, that includes ancient Kemet, ancient Kani, the entire civilization. The culture was animated and is animated by religion. So for the Negroes who believe otherwise, you've just been corrupted by the whites and their offspring to embrace and worship anything that seems like it's outside of the term religion. They made the term religion poison to your ears, which is nonsense. Of course, it's an English term. We're speaking English. But the concept of relinking, that comes from our people. It has nothing to do with the whites and their offspring. They have never been able to relink with the Supreme Being, the Great Mother, Great Father, the deities. They cannot do that. They never have been, and they never will be able to. So they don't even have the capacity racially or spiritually to relink to anything or realign with anything. They don't have the anchor within their spirit to affect that process. And we get into, we have an entire book on the Ka, the soul, the divine consciousness, the specific deity that dwells within your head region, that force in the region that's seated in the brain, the spiritual entity that is seated in the physical brain, that divinity that pulls you through your head in the right direction, whether you harmonize with that pull or not. That is a divinity. For males, it's a male divinity. For females, it's a female divinity. Depending on who you are assigned to before you were born into the world, that force in nature, that Ka, that Kaet, is a your own personal divinity, a messenger of the Supreme Being that dwells within your head region, that pulls you in the right direction and gives you messages and urges and mandates, and you are to harmonize with that. And spirituality is about aligning with that and realigning with it when you get out of order. So, and spirituality and religion is really the same word, the same concept. That foolish notion that there's a difference between spirituality and religion was created by the whites and their offspring. That's pure foolishness. Real religion and spirituality is identical. Fake religion and spirituality is not identical. The problem is they are classifying Christianity and Islam and Judaism and Hebrewism and all, and Hinduism and Buddhism and all these others as religion when they're actually perversions of a fragment of our ancestral religion. So the reality is, in ancient Kemet, we practice religion, and we continue to do so today. In ancient Kani, Nubia, we practice religion. All over the continent, we practice and continue to practice religion, and the culture is animated by that. This is where we get our knowledge from. This is where our knowledge base comes from, learning about the natural world. It wasn't about sitting around just making observations and recording observations over thousands of years as a pseudo-scientific empiricist. Of course, we record information, but we get direct information from the forces that actually animate creation, and then we record the information they give to us, and we establish and replicate what they teach and can build civilization without having to wait for hundreds of years to engage in observation. So the whites and their offspring teach that nonsense about pure or quote-unquote impure empiricism as the basis of knowledge gathering, while we can go directly to the forces in nature that undergird creation and learn directly from them, learn the laws of creation and replicate that and recreate a civilization that reflects that, because we're in tune with that. Part of the ritual practices and, of course, the laws that we adhere to, the order that we adhere to in our Khan culture, Nyamewa, Nyame, and Sheshe, which is the great father, great mother and great father's divine order or arrangement. That term in Sheshe means order or arrangement, divine order. In our ancient Kemet, Amenet, Amen, Sesher. Sesher means a plan or arrangement or an order. So the divine order would be Amen, Amenet, Sesher. Amenet, Amen, Sesher. That divine order or arrangement. Sesher in ancient Kemet becomes Nsesher in Akan, which means order or arrangement. So the Nyamewa, Nyame, and Sesher means the divine arrangement or order. The expression of order is law. Law expresses order. Hate is the impression of order. So the expansive and contractive poles of divine order is divine law, which is the same word as love and divine hate. So we get into that In fact, we have a book, Modernity, Divine Law, Love, and Divine Hate, where we detail that. But when we're talking about law and how to adhere to order, what is the expression of order, and the laws that govern society and laws that govern our interaction with one another, this is where we get into some of those laws. But the reality is the 42 enunciations of Ma'at are more than just laws. There are 42 Abosom, 42 Orisha, 42 Vodou, 42 Ntoru, Ntorotu, 42 deities that are being invoked, ritually invoked, communicated with, that the person aligns their spirit with and communicates with, not only in this ritual after death during the transition from the physical world to the spirit realm. Yes, we do confront these forces in nature and show that we live in harmony with these various forces in nature, these various organs in the great divine body. Because if we can't show that we are in harmony with them, then we won't be able to move into the ancestral realm to live in harmony with the ancestresses and ancestors that are spiritually cultivated, grounded, and harmonious. We'll be repelled from that spiritual domain. We'll end up being earthbound, wayward, the kind of people who were hanging out at the place where they died, where they got shot, where they were murdered, where they died in the hospital, something like that, died in a home, and their spirits are still hanging around those areas. So in order to move forward, you have to live this life during your lifetime, living in harmony with the laws that govern these divinities, so that when you make your transition, first of all, living in harmony with divine order throughout life to maintain order in society. Order in the family, order within yourself, order within your family, order within society. Then when you make your transition, you can demonstrate that you live that kind of lifestyle. Once you became mature, you live that kind of lifestyle on a consistent basis, you demonstrate that by invoking these 42 Abosom and harmonizing with them. And when you do that, then you can pass that quote-unquote test and move to the ancestral realm. You can show that you are a harmonious spirit living in harmony with order. If you're the kind of spirit who has negative energy, you're involved in criminality and so forth, you will be repelled from the ancestral community, no different than when you have two magnets on the table, as we always say, when the same polarities are facing one another, before the other magnet can touch the other one, it will repel that magnet without touching. When you're engaged in disorder, you reverse your polarity. You're no longer in harmony with and attractive to the ancestral community of your great-grandmothers and great-grandfathers and going back thousands of years who lived in harmony with order. They have a harmonious existence in Asamando, in the ancestral realm. If you try to bring perversity, disorder, because you're rolling on that disorder vibration, then you will be repelled. You'll be repulsive to and repelled by the ancestresses and ancestors as well as the Abosom. You won't be able to get to that community even if you try. You will be repelled, literally. So you have to harmonize your thoughts, intentions, and actions on a consistent basis in life so that you're not repulsive to your family members, to your colleagues, to people in our community, to our larger Afurakani, Afurai Kaitni society, nation, and international communities, specifically Afurakani, Afurai Kaitni, African, black. When we engage in harmonious thoughts, intentions, and actions, we don't make ourselves repulsive to one another. We are attractive to one another, and we can harmonize with one another. We can harmonize our activities for the benefit of one another. That's harmony, that's law, that's morality. But when we engage in disorder, you make yourself repulsive. When somebody commits criminal acts, murder, child molestation, theft, whatever it is, you make yourself repulsive to other people who are connected to you, who would normally be connected to you. They don't want to have anything to do with you, and you may make yourself so repulsive that repelling energy wants to crush you, so they want to beat you down, lock you up, or kill you. We engage in harmonious interaction because within the crop, encoded within the crop, within the soul, the divine consciousness, is the program or the blueprint for us to live in harmony with order in thoughts, intentions, and actions, no matter what the situation arises, what situation confronts us. So the 42 deities that are invoked. And when people actually read the entire text instead of just reading 42, we're so brainwashed by Christianity, Islam, Judaism, and so forth, that the first thing we do is we reject the entire text and only look at, I have not done this, I have not done that, I have not done this. We translate it into, well, these were the Ten Commandments, therefore there were really 42 commandments, and we live by 42 commandments. That's nonsense. It has much more to do with that. What the person, if you read the actual text, what the person was doing, the spirit had to go before a specific abosom and invoke the abosom by name and then tell the abosom and prove to the force of the nature, the different abosom, who are all actual judges of Ma'at, judges of Ma'at. This is in the Usetch Ma'ati, or the hall of Ma'at, the dual Ma'at, in that hall of judgment. These 42 abosom are 42 judges of Ma'at and Ma'at. If you cannot pass that test, then you can't move to the ancestral realm. So invoking these abosom by name, fusing your energy with theirs, if it is harmonious, then you prove that. You show what you accepted and what you reject. You accept order and you reject disorder. So let's read first from the Divine Prohibition Against Dissexuality, Homosexuality, and Ancient Kemet to give a summary of that information. We're not going to read the whole piece. On page on page 1 of that particular text, and we're going to read through that real quick just to summarize what we're saying. In order to live in harmony in perpetuity after death in the ancestral realm, as well as during life in the physical realm, the Apurakani, Apuraikai, the African black individual must ritually invoke the 42 Ntoru, Ntorotu, meaning gods and goddesses who are judges of Ma'at and Ma'at, divine law, in order to harmonize with the energy of the Ntoru, Ntorotu, these divinities, the spirit forces in creation, the embodiments of divine order in creation. Their energy is invoked. Root voke means to call, so it's invoked ritually. Once the energy is invoked or called, it can be internalized, infused, and replenished within the individual. Like a drop of water fusing with a river, harmonizing with this greater force, body of water in nature, so does the Apurakani, Apurakai, near African individual spirit fuse his or her energy with the energy of the greater spirit force in nature that he or she is invoking ritually. This opens the way for one to align him or herself with the divine order of creation. So you go before a force in nature that animates the sun, that fiery energy, and you fuse your fiery energy with that force in nature. And when you ritually fuse your energy and make that link with that, the great force in nature that carries that fiery energy, now you can be replenished by that energy. You harmonize with that force in nature. You incorporate that energy. Now it's internalized, infused, and replenished within you. Now you can do the same thing with the next force in nature. And then you go through that whole sequence of 42 divinities, no different than the various organs. There are more than 42 organs in your body. All of them must be living or functioning in harmony with one another in order for you to function harmoniously. So just like there are organs in the body, there are organs within the great divine body of the Supreme Being. That's what the deities literally are. The created universe, the black substance of space, is the body of the Supreme Being. Amen, net, and amen. Nyame wa nyame. And the deities are literally the organs, the spiritual forces are the organs within that great divine body, and we are the cells of the organ. So when we harmonize with the organs, just like your cells harmonize with your heart cells, harmonize with your heart, they don't try to go against the heart, they harmonize with support the heart function. If they try to go against the heart function, they become cancerous, and the immune system kills them and just expels them from the body. But they try to harmonize, and they harmonize with the organ of which they are a part, their parent organ, organ system. We do the same thing with our parent organs and organ systems, which are the forces in nature, the spirits that govern the sun, animate the sun, moon, earth, oceans, rivers, and so forth. So there are 42 that we go through, just like the various cells in your body harmonize with the various organs in your body. We ritually invoke them, invoke their energy. Their energy is invoked. We then can receive it. It can replenish us when we internalize it, and then we can align with that force in nature and align with that order, that aspect of order in creation. Now, next we say, however, in the process of accepting, receiving the infusion of energy, divinely ordered energy of the N-Toru-N-Toru-Tu, the individual must reject perversity, disordered energy, which can manifest as a result of disordered thoughts, intentions, and or actions. So disordered energy can manifest as a result of disordered thoughts, intentions, and actions. When you flip your thoughts, intentions, and actions towards lust or malice and engage in perverse thinking, which leads to perverse intentions and can manifest as perverse behavior, what you have done is you've reversed your polarity. What we must do is not only accept the energy by invoking the Abosom, but we also must reject disordered energy, perverse thoughts, intentions, and actions. And we must do that throughout the course of our lives, but we also must demonstrate after, in the after-death state, when we make our transition, we must demonstrate that we had a track record of rejecting disordered thoughts, intentions, and actions when we invoke these Abosom. And the way we do that is by invoking them, because if you invoke them and you have that perversity within you, it will manifest itself and you will be repelled, no different than the magnet on the table again. So we say, however, in the process of accepting or receiving the infusion of energy, that divinely ordered energy of the N-Toru, N-Toru-Tu, the individual must reject perversity, disordered energy, which can manifest as a result of disordered thoughts, intentions, and or actions. The individual thus invokes, accepts the energy of the N-Toru, N-Toru-Tu, the spirits of divine order, and rejects, repels disorder. It's no different than the sun shining on our bodies. We receive that energy. We internalize that energy. It replenishes the heat within our body and fuels us and gives us the power to move and operate. If we're living in harmony with the energy, then that's what happens. It's no different than the energy of water, the earth mother, the magnetosphere, all these different things that affect us. On a physical level, same thing occurs with the spirits that animate these physical bodies, these domains of creation. So we harmonize ourselves with them. So we go before these 42 divinities and invoke them. Now, they are judges of Ma'at and Ma'at. Of course, first we must say, yes, there's a divinity named Ma'at. She's a female force in creation that we communicate with, that we invoke on a daily basis. She possesses, just like the Orisha Obatala or Ogun or other divinities will possess. In the Yoruba tradition, she is called Odu. That's the Orisha Odu. Her name is, her popular title in ancient Kemet is Ma'at. In the Akan culture, she's Oma Me, same divinity. There's also the deity Ma'at, the male force of law and balance in creation. There's Ma'at and Ma'at. It is not just Ma'at. Ma'at has been there all along. He is a divinity whom we invoke ritually at our shrines on a daily basis. Some people haven't heard of Ma'at because they just haven't paid attention. Once again, this is why it's important to embrace ancestral religion and engage that practice so that you can actually experience these forces in nature which are connected to all Afurakani, Afurakaini people, the vast majority of us, except for those who are criminals, child molesters, and things like that, who have repelled their own cry. Now they're just as criminal as the whites and their offspring. The vast majority of black people around the world are connected to the forces in nature, these various forces in nature. When you engage the ritual process and embrace your ancestral religion, then you will interface with Ma'at and Ma'at, and you will know who they are. If you want to look for a textual reference of the divinity Ma'at, you can find it in the what they call the Nesiamsu papyrus, talking about the creation of the world. You can also find it in the 11th hour of the night in the Shatan Duat, the book of what is in the ancestral realm, quote-unquote spirit realm. Well, sometimes they call it the book of the underworld. In the 11th hour, you will see an image of that deity, Ma'ah, and then his name is spelled right there. But you can find him in both those sections, even in the Nesiam Su Papyrus when it's talking about the creation of the world, and they have the two different versions, which are basically the same thing. One of them says, I lay a foundation in Ma'ah. It does not say Ma'at. It's spelled with the feather of Shu as well as Ma'at, that ostrich feather. But the determinative Medut is that of a seated male divinity, not a female divinity. So when it says, I laid a foundation in Ma'at, people very often translate that as a laid a foundation in Ma'at. But if you actually look at the text and not just the transliteration, you'll see that the Medut is a male divinity. It is Ma'at. And that's the same male divinity you'll find in the Shatn Dua, the 11th hour of the night. And you'll see his name there, and you'll see an image of him there. So this is a force in nature, a divinity that we invoke. So the hall of double Ma'ati, Ma'an Ma'at, the 42 divinities that are judges within that hall. Within your body, you have that hall of Ma'at that's going from the base of the spine to the top of the head. And those 42 gnomes, or 42 sepatu, the 42 administrative divisions of ancient Kemet, you can be found in 42 divisions going from the base of the spine to the top of the head. And those 42 divisions are governed by different sets of divinities. And these same divinities, you find the 42 divinities that are the 42 assessors of Ma'at and Ma'at, judges of Ma'at and Ma'at. They're in the body, they're on the land, they're in the spirit realm. We must invoke them, because we can't function in the world without harmonizing with them. No different than you can't function in the world without harmonizing with the sun, harmonizing with the earth mother, the oceans, the rivers, the atmosphere, and so forth. So you can't get around that. Now, when we talk about these 42 different divinities, when you go before a divinity, go before a shrine, and this is just like we would do throughout the course of our lives, we have shrines in our homes. So we go to a shrine to invoke a divinity. If you recall the Shabaka text, when they talk about, when Ptah talking about how he fashioned the world, and he fashioned the bodies and the shrines of the deities and set them in their places, and fashioned them of all kinds of wood and metal and so forth, according to their desire, according to their dictates. And once he established their shrines and the forms that they would take, then the deities took up residence in their shrine. We do the same thing when we establish shrines and we have sculptures and different things on the shrines. These are media by which the Abosom, the Abodu, the Orisha, Ntoru, Ntortu would take up residence, as well as the ancestresses and ancestors, take up residence in these physical spaces so that we can have a full physical and spiritual communication, interaction, interface. We are spirits animating a physical body. The ancestresses and ancestors and the deities are spirits. But then we can give them a physical space to take up residence in temporarily so that we can have a full physical and spiritual interfacing when we're communicating with them, and we're focused specifically on that communication. When we take everything and focus everything else out of the way, we take everything else out of the way, we set aside a specific time, a specific space, and approach them in a specific manner so we can have a clear, direct communication without any distraction. We can communicate with the Abosom wherever we are at any time in the world. But when we want to sit down and focus, then we set aside a specific time, a specific space, and approach them in a specific manner so we can have a full, direct communication without any distraction. And so we establish shrine. We go before a shrine. We invoke the Abosom. The Abosom takes up residence in the shrine, and we can communicate with them. Sometimes they will possess. They'll possess the individual. They'll possess the spouse of the person. They'll possess the child, the son, or the daughter. They'll possess the family member, possess the priest or priestess on the spot. They communicate with us. They teach us. They show us different things. Sometimes they simply take up residence in the shrine space, and they communicate directly with us after we invoke them and approach them harmoniously. Just like we do that and we go to a shrine, you go to a ritual and you salute the shrine or invoke the Abosom or the Orisha at the shrine, we would do that on a daily basis. Our morality comes directly from the deity. They show us they are the embodiments of divine order. They show us how to live in harmony with order and what would happen when we get out of harmony with order on a daily basis. They communicate that to us through our akra. We encode that within our proverbial wisdom, within our symbolism, like the Adinkra symbols in the Akan culture, the Medutu, the hieroglyphics, our writing systems, our proverbial wisdom stories, laws and so forth in ancient Kemet and various other cultures, whether we wrote things down or we passed these things down orally. There are thousands and thousands of proverbs in Akan culture. There are gold weights that encode this knowledge, these moral admonitions and so forth. And then, of course, when we engage in ritual practices, the divinities and the ancestresses and ancestors possess on a regular basis and speak directly to the people. So it's not some foolishness, like some Negro would say, the God spoke to them 2,000 years ago and they wrote down a Bible, and then nobody spoke for the next 2,000 years. That's idiocy. That's nonsense. First of all, it never happened. Second of all, we don't have to sit around waiting or saying, hey, nobody's spoken to the deity in 2,000 years. We just have to rely on what was written 2,000 years ago. That's nonsense. Even though it wasn't even written 2,000 years ago, it's much younger than that. But that's pure nonsense. The same deities that communicated with us thousands of years ago are the exact same deities that possess our people, us, our family members, children, relatives, today on a consistent basis, on a regular basis. So we learn our morality from them. We harmonize with them, learn the order of creation from them. And our laws are an expression of the order that we learn and experience from them. And we harmonize our thoughts, intentions, and actions with these forces of order that move us in activities and ways of being that are harmonious with order. And they constantly are moving us in that direction. The only time we get out of harmony is when we go against what the Abosom are pulling us to do and teaching us to do. So we, just like we do that on a regular basis, ritually throughout the course of our lives, when we make our transition, we go before these same 42 major Abosom, and there are more than 42 divinities with these major Abosom, and we invoke them just like we invoke them throughout the course of our lives. And we harmonize with them, and we demonstrate through our invocation and our fusing with them, our energy with theirs, that we harmonize with them. And if there was some perversity within us, we would be repelled by them. So this is what takes place. We want to talk about, with regard to shrines, the notion or concept of magnification, so you can understand how that energy comes into a shrine. If you have a magnifying glass and you go out when it's a very sunny day, you can take that magnifying glass and hold it in a specific position. The sun, of course, the Aten, the Oriah, is 93 million miles away from Asaseya for the Earth Mother on average, and but that sunlight travels and it pierces through the black substance of space, that dark energy, dark matter, which we call the divinities Khan Kayat, and reaches the Earth Mother, penetrates the atmosphere. Of course, it warms us up and we can feel the energy on our skin. And if we had a piece of newspaper or some leaves on the ground, the leaves would be warm just from warm sunlight. But if you take a magnifying glass and put it over those dry leaves and position it properly, then the sunlight will penetrate through the glass within the magnifying glass, become magnified, pinpointed, and then that energy will become more intense, and the leaves will therefore catch on fire. And, of course, we've done that as children. We've seen those experiments and so forth. So we're magnifying the energy of the sun that's 93 million miles away, but the energy reaches across. It's never disconnected from the sun. It reaches across the black substance of space, 93 million miles, penetrates the Earth. And when we magnify it, it's intensified at the spot we magnified, and there's a flame that erupts. The shrines that we have are magnifying devices for the Abosom, for the divinities, for the forces in nature. So when we establish them ritually and we form them ritually according to the dictates of the Abosom, just as Ptah stated that he did at the beginning of creation, when he fashioned the shrines, the physical shrines of the divinities, the mountains, the rivers, the oceans, the different topographical features in the world, physical shrines for the divinity, shrines in nature for the divinity, as well as specific sculptures in wood, metal, different kinds of stones, according to the dictates, according to the energy complex of the divinity. He fashioned them in a specific form, and once he was able to fashion them and fashion them in that specific form according to their energy complex, now their spirits can take up residence in that specific form he fashioned. When we fashion a shrine according to the dictates of the Abosom, then it resonates at their frequency, and they will take up residence in that physical shrine to communicate directly with us. That shrine becomes a magnifier. It takes the energy of that universal force in creation, universal in the to the extent that is connected to all Apurai Kani Apurai Kaini people, not universal in the sense that all people have access to the deities because they do not. Only Apurai Kani Apurai Kaini people have access to the forces in nature because only Apurai Kani Apurai Kaini people have a ka, or a kaya, a soul of divine consciousness, which is within our bodies the great magnifier of the divinities for us. In our dwelling places and in our environment, when we establish shrines, we magnify the energy of the Abosom. They take up residence, and that energy becomes intense through that magnified structure, and then they communicate directly with us. We do that throughout the course of the day, throughout the course of the year, throughout the course of our lives, and then through invocation, we magnify and connect with the Abosom after this, in the after-death process, and we move forward. So let's see if we have any questions with regard to that. Okay, so one question was, with all the scholarly talk demeaning the word religion, with you trying to take that word back, how do you define it differently from spirituality? Religion just simply means, of course, back, or again, religion means to tie or to bind. So that's just realignment. That's all it is. For us, it's realignment with the Supreme Being, Amen, Amenet, Nyame, Nyamewa, Lisan Mawu, Chukwu and Kamosu, and so forth, Kolotiolo, Hatieleo, in the Sendufo tradition. Aligning our thoughts, intentions, and actions with the Supreme Being through the agency of the Abosom and Nananon and Samafo, through the agency of the deities and the ancestral spirits. When you consistently engage that process, that's a spiritual process. That's spirituality. Spirituality is not just doing something that's non-physical. Making something move and making something happen, or communicating with a discarnate spirit and they do something for you and therefore you're engaged in spirituality. Or they show you something that's going to happen and it happens and now you're engaged in spirituality. That's not doing anything. That's not spirituality. Spirituality only occurs when you're linking your thoughts, intentions, and actions with the divinity and the honored ancestresses and ancestors of Afuraka Afuraikai, because that's the link to the Supreme Being. If there's no link to your thoughts, intentions, and actions when you're engaged in some practice that you call spirituality, or some thoughts, intentions, and actions you call spirituality, but it's not grounded in the Supreme Being, the deities, and the ancestral spirits, then you're not engaged in spirituality. You're engaged in nonsense. So spirituality and religion are two sides of the same coin. The Wife and Offspring, first of all, they promoted the idea of false religion, manufactured fake religions, fake characters, to force that on us after thousands of years of invading ancient Kemet and other centers of civilization in Afuraka, Afuraikai, being crushed by us on a consistent basis for thousands of years. Militarily, they began to infiltrate on the outskirts of civilization, trying to infiltrate with regard to trade and commerce, and then exacerbate divisions that were already existing in society between certain groups. Some people against the ruling class, if the particular ruling class happened to be a tyrannical ruling class in that particular dynasty. Most of the ruling classes were not like that. Most of our elders and elderesses weren't like that, and we have provisions to remove them. But sometimes you get somebody involved in that. Or sometimes you have people who are engaged in lustful activities. They want an outlet for that. The culture doesn't allow for that. So they're either forced to adhere to the culture or separate themselves or exile from the culture. The Whites and their Offspring gave them an opportunity to continue in their lust, and they were allied with some of the Whites and their Offspring to attack their own brothers and sisters. The criminal type, traitor type Negro. So whites and their offspring engaged that process for hundreds of years after losing the wars against our people for thousands of years. They realized after a while that we would never submit to them because we understood that they are inferior, physically and spiritually. So the only thing that we would submit to is divine order. So if they could figure out a way to corrupt the idea of what divine order is amongst a small segment of the population, they would be able to create divisions and gain some measure of control. So it took them hundreds of years to engage that process, to manufacture Christianity and keep refining that foolishness to make it into the nonsense that it is today. The same with Islam, Judaism, Hebrewism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, all of them. So they manufactured these fake traditions. They've been going on in different places for centuries. In reality, most Afro-Arakani, Afro-Arakani people have not really gotten caught up in that nonsense except for the past 100 to 150 years on the continent over the past 100 years. As we said before, slavery didn't last on the continent. You know, they weren't enslaving us for 400 years. That time frame comes from the biblical nonsense, and this is where you hear that refrain, 400 years, 400 years, 400 years. The whites and their offspring in West and Central Afro-Arakai, Afro-Arakai didn't take over until the late 1800s in most of those areas. Late 1800s into the early 1900s. And then the various Afro-Arakani, Afro-Arakai nations in what they call sub-Saharan Afro-Arakai, Afro-Arakai to Africa began to assert their independence politically in the 50s, beginning with Sudan, which was first under a black male leader, and then later on, a year and a half later, then Ghana came second, and then the various other groups. So between the late 1800s, early 1900s, to the mid-50s, into the 60s, that's when the whites and their offspring were in control for about 60 years. They were in control politically of the various nations on the continent. But then we started having liberation movements in the 60s and 70s and into the 80s, to the point where the various countries have liberated themselves politically, but economically and socially and culturally, they're still dominated because they allowed that infection to occur during that 50 to 60, 70-year period when the whites and their offspring were establishing missionary schools and other nonsense into the culture. Some of our people, they weren't enslaved on the continent for 400 years of nonsense. So some of our people, and then some of us, we were less than 300 years, 200 years, just depends on the area in North, Central, South America, the Caribbean, it just depends on where we were. So those of us who got over here, we got caught up in some of that nonsense, but then we started breaking away from that nonsense. We started trying to look towards our ancestral religious tradition. We started reexamining our blood-transmitted culture. The whites and their offspring saw that. They saw that was the most detrimental move that we could make. They don't care anything about Negroes talking about their black nationalism. They're going to leave their religion at home. A lot of people quote that from Malcolm X. That was one of the statements, the worst statements he ever made. So they like the other things he talks about, and that gets us hooked because he's talking about good things. But then when he made that statement, a lot of Negroes hang on that statement, and they continue to repeat that. That's the number one thing we should be focused on is religion. That's the way the whites and their offspring were finally able to control us after thousands of years of trying everything else, political, economic, and everything else. But when they were able to corrupt the religion, that's when they were able to control the minds of the people. It's no wonder that there are over 2 billion Christians in the world. They'll try to say it's close to 2 billion Muslims. There are hundreds of millions of people engaged in various forms of Buddhism and Taoism and Hinduism and all kinds of other nonsense, these fake religions. And then we get enslaved by these people under the cultural dominance of these people, and we end up taking on this nonsense ourselves, and it totally controls our minds from the time we're children to the time we die. So until we address ancestral religion, we're not doing anything. It's through the embrace of ancestral religion we restore order to ourselves, we incorporate law, and we restore balance to our thoughts, intentions, and actions. When we do that, then we can engage in an Amain Sesiu nation-building process. self-love and community and collective work and responsibility and so forth automatically extends from that, from re-embracing your ancestral religious traditions, because you're grounded in what your function in the world is and your connection to other Afurakani, Afurakaitni people who came into the world to execute a collective function as well. You learn that through the practice of ancestral religion, attuning with the actual deity that governs your kra, governs your very being, your unkra and kra via your function, your divine function. So once we started moving in that direction and rejecting Christianity and rejecting Islam and rejecting Judaism, Hebrewism, Moorishism, all the nonsense that the whites and their offspring manufactured over 100 years ago. So the Moorish groups, Islamic groups, Hebrew groups, all this nonsense about 100 years ago, they all got their start by the whites and their offspring and the Negro followers who were agents of the whites and their offspring. And the same continues today. The teachers are Negro agents of the whites and their offspring. They know exactly what they're doing. They're teaching misinformation in these various groups. And this is why they're teaching it, because it's misinformation. And then you have the followers who are blind, who follow these Negroes because they think that they're teaching them something of value. That's been going on for about 100 years. But most of our people didn't get involved in these fringe groups. At most of our people, if they were involved in anything, it was Christianity, but then our people started rejecting Christianity as well. So the whites and their offspring had to come up with another method to keep us enslaved in the same arena. So they start pushing so-called, quote-unquote, New Age spirituality, where they'll push metaphysics, which is nothing but a fragmented corruption of our culture. It is not our culture. The occult pseudosciences are not our culture. There are many Negroes who try to say the whites and their offspring preserved our culture in the occult, preserved our sciences in the occult, preserved our sciences in the pseudo-metaphysical information and the Kabbalah and things like that, and Sufism, waiting for the time for us to return and awaken and grab the information from the crackers who said, it's pure idiocy. Only Negroes who are still enamored with the whites and their offspring go for that nonsense. Clearly demonstrable when you actually embrace real ancestor religion as opposed to these foolish offshoots. So they saw that we were going in the proper direction, so they tried to create another distraction, which is pseudo-spirituality. Whether you get it from Oprah or The Secret or nonsense you hear in Hidden Colors or anywhere else, this pseudo-spirituality, all kinds of things, this whole notion of, well, I'm not into organized religion, I'm into spirituality. But the whites and their offspring were saying, okay, nigga, if you don't go for Christianity anymore, I'm going to give it back to you, and we're just going to call it spirituality and make you foolishly believe that you actually left the organized religion because you're doing something else now, and actually you're taking on the exact same values in a different package. You're still upholding white supremacy. You're not learning to hate the whites and their offspring. You're not learning divine hate through this pseudo-spirituality. These pseudo-spiritualities will teach you that hate is wrong, just like Christians, Muslims, and Hebrews and everybody else will tell you you shouldn't be hating the whites and their offspring and their culture and their fake religion. No matter how loud they may bark about claiming to hate the whites and their offspring, some of them, they embrace the whites and their offspring, their fake culture and their false religion, and they reject their own. So no matter what they say, it means nothing. What they're doing is what's important. Drug addicts will say they're not high. We've worked with drug addicts. They'll say, that, hey, I'm not addicted, but you got a syringe hanging out your arm. So Negroes who are calling themselves Hebrews or Moors or Muslims or whatever, thinking that they've left the building, they're still embracing white culture. They're still embracing the insane notion of white supremacy, and they're still afflicting the community with nonsense. So since some of us left some of that nonsense alone, then they give us pseudo-spirituality and say, oh, I'm not into religion, I'm into spirituality, as though you left religion alone. In reality, you're still engaged in the same nonsense. So people have been repeating, I'm not into organized religion now. Religion is different from spirituality. I'm into spirituality. And when you look at what they talk about, it's the same nonsense that Oprah, some white homosexuals on New Age television networks and YouTube are talking about. So you haven't left anything. So that's the key. You also hear people say things like, you know, We're spiritual beings having a human experience. We're gods having a human experience. That's idiocy. That's nonsense. That's pure foolishness. There's a difference between the Aposom, the Orisha, the Vodou, the Ntoru, Ntorsu, the deities, the forces in nature. They have their own function in creation. Ahura Kani, Ahura Kaini, human beings, as humans, and only the only true humans, we have our own function collectively in creation. That's like a cell, a heart cell, trying to say, well, I'm not a cell, I'm the actual heart, I'm the organ. I'm just a heart organ having a cellular experience. That's idiocy. And our people are repeating that nonsense because they're aping what the whites and their offspring teach. They didn't get that little line. They didn't come up with that little line on their own. The first time you read those lines or hear those lines are from the whites and their offspring. And our people repeat that nonsense as though it's deep or spiritual or cultural or something, and it's purely nonsense. So this is where that comes from. People who are blinded, they embrace these notions, and then they begin to redefine spirituality. And it means divine love and unconditional love and all this other nonsense. Spirituality does not mean divine love. It doesn't mean unconditional love. There's no such thing as unconditional love. Love and law is the same word. And we've proven that in our book, Marenichi, Divine Love, Law, Divine Hate. Love in ancient Kemet, in the Coptic dialect, the term is meh. The word for law in the Coptic dialect is meh. Meh and meh, law and love. When you're in love with an individual entity, that means in our culture, you're in law, meaning you interact with that individual or entity in harmony with divine order. Your interaction is a reflection of divine order. It's a lawful interaction or a loveful interaction. So when you're in love or you're in law, you're embracing Ma'ah and Ma'at, the male and female divinities of law and balance in creation. It doesn't mean just falling in and out of lust, which is what the whites and offspring are talking about. But law or love, law is the basis of that which is conditional. Divine law is imprints conditions on the created order. It shows the parameters within which we must operate in order to stay in harmony with order. And it also shows if we get outside of those parameters, we'll be slated for destruction, just like your cells operate within the order of your body, according to the laws that govern their makeup. If they get outside of those parameters, then you have an immune system that will destroy them. It's the same thing with us. So the laws are the skeleton. The laws are the scaffolding. The laws are the basis of conditioning in the created order. So for somebody to say there's a such thing as unconditional love or law, that's nonsense. It's oxymoronic. But of course, our people repeat nonsense like that because we've bought into a false notion of what spirituality is and what religion is. So we have to properly define what we engage in. Okay. So just want to make sure there's no other question in the chat. Okay. It looks like we have a comment on the phone line, and then after that comment, we'll get into the whole piece about the fictional character Moses. But we wanted to show that when you're talking about the 42 enunciations of Ma'at, or the laws of Ma'at, it's not just 42 laws. We invoke divinities. And we should also say, just like there are 42 divinities, these major divinities, there are more than 42, but just like you have major organs in the body, there are major divinities, forces in nature. And the 42 administrative divisions of ancient Kemet, 42 gnomes, just like you have 50 states in America, there are 42 gnomes in ancient Kemet, governed by certain divinities. And we invoke these divinities on a consistent basis, on a daily basis throughout our lives, at some point throughout our lives. In our Khan culture, we have a ritual calendar, which is 9 sets of 42 days. Every day in our Khan culture, every day of the week, is governed by a major divinity, a major Aposom. We invoke these different divinities on a daily basis. Ritually, when we have ritual practices, we invoke these different divinities throughout our lives. They communicate with us, they possess, they communicate, and so forth. They possess, get inside the bodies of people, and speak. show us how to heal. Heal themselves. They'll do the healing sometimes or show us how to heal. Take us out into the forest and show us what plant to pick. With regard to symbolism or functional symbolism, just like when people have examples and experience with the Abosom, with the Orisha, with the ancestresses and ancestors, you'll have an Abosom possess a family member or an associate. The Abosom gets on the ground and grabs a stick and draws a symbol within the dirt, within the soil, or within the sand, and then tells us what the name of that symbol is, or points to a different animal, or points to a different aspect of nature, and shows us what the name of that force in nature is, or that entity is. This is when they talk about Tehuti, as we call Brechiri Hunuate in our Akan culture, Orumila in the Yoruba tradition, but when Tehuti taught us how to write the Medutu, the hieroglyphics, that's not just a fancy way of saying that, you know, we did something symbolic. We're talking about spirit possession and the deity actually showing us the symbols, and from that point on, we remember those, record them, and utilize them from that point on. They're going to show us the symbol, for example, that represents the T, which looks like an upside-down bowl, which is actually the upper half of the calabash, the canopy of the planet Earth, just like the bottom half. If you have a calabash, a circular calabash, the upper half and the bottom half, that upper half, the curvature of the sky and so forth, also the curvature within the roof of the mouth. So when you speak and that life force energy comes up, the windpipe, and takes that same form of the hieroglyphic within the mouth, the circular roof of the mouth and the flatness of the tongue actually creates that symbol, the tut symbol. So when you say tut, the flat bottom tongue touching the roof of the mouth, the roof of the mouth is arched, the air that is captured inside when you say tut is the exact same form that symbol takes. It's the same form when the life force energy circulates through the quote-unquote upper half of Earth. When we're standing on Earth and we look up in the sky and we can see the horizons, the east and the west and so forth, we're looking up into what appears to be the upper half of a calabash. And the life force energy circulates through that curvature, circulates through that form, and it takes the form of the tut sound, the capping sound, that caps off the creative energy. Just like the air takes that sound, that form inside the mouth, the life force energy in the air takes that form. That ra and raet force takes that form. The same thing occurs with the various root medutu, the root symbols in ancient Kemet. They take the form that the life force energy takes when they move through creation. So when Tehuti shows people, when a deity possesses, an Orisha possesses, a Vodou possesses, and draws a symbol in the ground, and tells us to use that symbol from now on for this particular sound, that's what we use. This happens today. It happened back then. Anybody who has experience with the Orisha, experience with the Abosom, experience with the Vodou, as well as the ancestresses and ancestors, have had an experience where an ancestral spirit or one of the Abosom will reach and grab something to write and draw something, to show us a specific lesson or teach us something that we need to know. So all these things that you read about, learn about in ancient Kemet, we have actual real-life experiences when you practice ancestral religion. The 42 divisions connected to the 42-day calendar in our Akan culture, every day is connected to divinity. Every one of the 42 days has its own special name in our Akan culture based on its position in that 42-day cycle. So there's a connection there because we are engaged in the same process. The same thing we engage in ancient Kemet, we have a similar process in our Akan culture today because it's the same culture. So let us, we have a call, looks like we have a phone call. Ichiowo, number 8244, did you have a question or a comment?
What's up, Brother Christian Ron? My question was just, I mean, earlier you were speaking on being repelled by the ancestral realm, and I was just wondering if your spirit is repelled by the ancestral realm, what then happens?
what very often happens are those kind of individuals are the kind of individuals who are still, they remain earthbound. They're the kind that hang around the place where they died. They died in a hospital, died in a house, died outside. They were homeless, died around in that area. Their spirits are still hanging around those areas. People who are clairvoyant, and again, this is a reason to embrace ancestral culture. Many of our people, many of the people listening now and who will listen, have experiences with ancestral spirits, sometimes when they're children, sometimes through into their adult life. They have experiences that scare them, whether they see an ancestral spirit, see a discarnate spirit, can feel them in the house, communicate or whatever, and then they get scared and they get told that they shouldn't be seeing that or something happens and they end up shutting down that capacity to interface with these forces, whether it's an ancestral spirit or divinity. And then sometimes later in life when they start studying culture again, they start listening to their own ka or kayak, their soul, divine consciousness, and they're moved in that direction. They begin to listen again, then they start to recover that ability and they start having these vivid experiences again. Sometimes it's, you know, out-of-body experiences when they're dreaming. Spirit leaves the body. They can see their body laying on the bed and things like that. Other people can see spirits. They're clairvoyant. They can see spirits walking around, or they're clairaudient. They can hear. Sometimes they believe that they're schizophrenic or they have a problem and they start drinking or doing drugs or going to a therapist to try to shut the voices down when in reality they're just clairaudient and they just need to get more grounded. So people have experience with seeing earthbound spirits, those who are not able to make that transition to the ancestral realm. And those kind of spirits still hang around. They hang around people's houses. They affect people in a negative way. They're upset. They're full of anxiety, anger very often. So that negative energy, they propel, just like project, just like when they were alive. If you're around people who are very negative and always complaining, always projecting anxiety, you can feel the heaviness of their energy, of their spirit.
Right.
Die, they still have that same heaviness. It's just increased or magnified to an extent because now nobody's paying attention to them because everybody who's alive has been taught you don't pay attention to anything you can't see. So they're trying to communicate with people and nobody's paying attention. So they're even more anxious because they're in a position that they don't know how to navigate, negotiate. So they project their anxiety onto the people who they are closest to, and people have arguments. Sometimes people get sick because they feel all this heavy energy. They get sick all the time. People are having arguments. They're irritable. They make bad decisions. They make bad decisions when they're driving, get into a car crash because they're distracted by this negative entity. They make bad decisions when they're at work and they have a problem at work. They make bad decisions when and say certain things or project irritability towards their spouse and they get into arguments on a regular basis. Make bad decisions about money and then they have money problems because they're being distracted and their motivations are being influenced by something they can't see and they don't realize that it's not really their thoughts, it's really the thoughts and anxieties and depression of these discarnate spirits. So they can hang out like that for a generation. Somebody moves into a house, the spirit is around that house, they tell everybody there's a spirit in his house, they end up moving out that house. 10 years later, somebody else moves into the house, same spirit is in the house. And they can remain like that. This is one of the reasons we have funerary practices. And we have the video we deal with on Nana Adjua, who is Adjua in Akan, Aset in ancient Kemet. We did a video dealing with her, examining the publication that we published on her. And it's on our YouTube channel, Ojidafo, youtube.com/Ojidafo. And we talk about part of that presentation, talking about the nature and function of funerary practices. Also with the Abosa Makua, who is Nebuchadnezzar in ancient Kemet, we have a video and article on her. Funerary practices, one of the reasons we engage in important funerary rituals, just like this, the annunciations of Ma'at, meaning you invoking these 42 divinities, is so that we can assist the deceased individual to make a smooth transition to the ancestral realm. When you do that, you don't only help that individual live amongst the honored ancestresses and ancestors and the other good ancestresses and ancestors so that they can further their own development, you also remove the backlog of earthbound spirits that are otherwise hanging around and causing all kinds of problems for people in their everyday lives, making people, influencing people, and motivating people to make bad decisions, get into arguments, develop physical illnesses and all kinds of things because they're stressed out as earthbound spirits and they don't know what to do, so they're projecting all their anxiety on other people. If you can remove, if there's two spirits in the house and you can remove them ritually from the house, then people will notice there's a much lighter feeling in the house and all the arguments that they were having and distractions and perverse motivations all of a sudden are gone. And then they realize something is different now. If they're involved in ancestral religion, they know exactly what happened. And once these things start happening negatively, they automatically know, okay, there's some entity in the house. We need to do something to repel this entity. But the ones who are earthbound because they were repelled from the ancestral realm or they just never even tried to make that transition because they were so stuck on the fact that they felt like they shouldn't have died at this particular time and they're so anxious and full of heaviness and magnetism, just like gravity, they're still magnetically drawn to their earthly family, and they don't want to make that transition. Sometimes funerary practices is to go and speak directly to that spirit and tell them you need to move on because you're not going to do anything helpful for yourself if you continue in this state. So, right. But that's what happens typically when they don't make that transition. Okay, so does that answer your question?
Yes, brother, that answers it in good detail.
Okay, all right. May I stay for the call? Appreciate it. Okay, and then we have another call. All right, Michiawo 7054. Did you have a question or a comment?
Yo, you hear me? Hello?
Yes. We can hear you.
Excellent brother. I got a question and a comment. Comment first is I've been, studying Nanasum for a minute now. I'm Gullah Geechee, Gullah Geechee, I'm part of the Gullah Geechee Nation in Southern South Carolina, and I think, I hope you got that in your plan, you make a visit to the city, right, of Southern South Carolina. The question I got, because, that's all the sacred land down there, as a home of Demo Beast. Question I got, how I stumbled upon the information I would say it was the Nanumen Samanfu that led me to the information, to the knowledge. But and I would say I feel that my ancestry is a con, but how do we know for sure what is our bloodline, our blood circle?
Okay, so you want to know how do you determine what your ancestral blood circle based on what family you incarnated through? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Okay. So now there are a couple of things, of course. It's become very popular for people to, go like on AfricanAncestry.com as well as some other services to do the whole DNA piece. Sometimes the DNA piece will, hit directly on the group that you're from. Like, for example, AfricanAncestry.com, they trace the Y chromosomal line father to father to father to father to father going all the way back. And then the mitochondrial DNA from the mother's side, which is from mother to mother to mother to mother going straight back. Now, if you were, say, for example, your father and his father and his father and his father, and going all the way back, you know, hundreds of years to Cameroon or something like that. If you're from that direct line, then that DNA will hit that direct line and they'll tell you, you know, you what group you're from. But if you were an ancestor from your father and then his father and his father going back a couple of hundred years, and your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, but then his wife was your, you know, the grandmother, but you were an ancestor of hers, and like maybe he was Fong and she was Igbo, because somehow they got mixed on the votes and things like that, then you're actually an Igbo ancestor who came through your Igbo female descendant, but because she married somebody who was Fong, then your Y chromosomal DNA, because you came through that union, would be Fong, and they would say you're Fong, and actually you were actually an Igbo ancestor who came through that female who he married. So unless you're from that direct Y chromosomal line, a mitochondrial line, directly from, you know, your physical mother and father, African ancestry wouldn't necessarily pick it up unless you did multiple tests with different cousins and stuff like that. The most direct way is establishing an encombre, Nsama encombre, as we call it, an ancestral shrine, and therefore you can communicate directly with your blood relatives, with your ancestresses and ancestors, so they can give you direct information and remind you exactly what ancestral group you incarnated from, what group were you living as part of on the continent before enslavement began. You were, this isn't your first time here. This is this is not our first time here. So you were living as part of a group at some point on the continent before the enslavement process was kicked off. You were living in a group and living and functioning and operating as part of an ancestral community on the continent. When your descendants, either you yourself or your descendants were enslaved, brought to the shores of, you know, North America or the Caribbean or Central America or South America or whatever, either yourself made your transition here or one of your descendants made your transition, but your descendants after them continue to, you know, proliferate. Some of them mixed with other groups on plantations, on the boats. All kinds of things happen, of course, and we know about that. Rape in the families and so forth. So your descendants may be a little bit lighter brown than they would have been if no mixture happened. But at some point you reincarnated through one of your descendants. That's why you're here right now. So even though there was blood mixture on the plantations and the boats and so forth, you're the same spirit returning through that blood mixture, but you're the same spirit. If you were Fong in a previous lifetime, you're still the same Fong spirit coming through one of your descendants. Now, if your skin is a little bit lighter brown because of the, you know, mixture that took place, you're still melanin dominant. You're a little bit lighter brown because it's evidence that violence took place in our family circles, but it's also evidence that the melanin won the physiological battle, of course, or else you would be melanin recessive. So, but your spirit is the same spirit. You can mix blood, but you cannot mix the soul. That's why we say, well, tumi fra moja, and so well, tumi and fra akra. You can mix blood, but you cannot mix the akra, or the akrawa, the soul, the divine consciousness. So incarnation through a blood circle is what determines identity, the spirit that returns. Who is the spirit? So that's encoded within your own kra, but it's also encoded within the memory, of course, of your ancestresses and ancestors, because they know who you were. They know who you were as an ancestor before you returned this time. They recall when you left the ancestral realm and entered into the womb of the individual who will be your mother. You left the ancestral realm. Just like when we make our transition, die, and we leave here, we leave our family behind, and we go to the ancestral realm. When we leave the ancestral realm to come to the physical world, we leave the ancestral family behind. They know who left them. They know who you incarnated through. They are connected to you right now. They're the ones who urge you to begin to re-embrace your culture. So when you establish that shrine and engage them on a consistent basis, then they will unfold these identities to you, if they haven't already. Sometimes they've unfolded your identity to you you may not have, excuse me, recognized it initially up front, but then you'll start finding the clues, like, wait a minute, they were showing me these specific cultural motifs that were jumping out to me all along, and it turns out that these were Akan all along. Or somebody may find out that they really like Akan culture, but when the Yoruba sculptures, they saw those or they heard a Yoruba song, that jumped out and it impressed them more than anything else. So they've been showing you clues of who you were all along, but they will confirm that through establishing that ancestral shrine. And then we have some information on that. If you haven't read that information, just send us an email.
I have basically the PDF I downloaded, basically all the PDF files from the Nunusum web page, and I studied a whole. It resonates with my soul, you know what I mean? Being a Okofo, you know, I resonate with my soul.
Okay.
being a warrior, you know what I mean? And like I say, you know, I've been doing some research, and I stumbled upon, you know, what you're doing, bruh, and it resonates with my soul, you know what I mean? I like you said, the Okra, and I feel it, you know. I just, you know, want to get a little more confirmation.
Okay.
Just want to get a little more confirmation, and I know that everything is everything, man. And I'm really, you know, I've been meaning to call on this blog talk for some time now, but I kept on forgetting it. You know, the ancestors and the ancestors just brought it back to me about a few minutes ago. So I went to the website, looked at the scrolled down, and it said you have 44 minutes left. I knew you started at 9 o'clock, and so, you know, I chimed in, and you was speaking, and you know, everything is everything, man. You know, and I just went on the Sankofa, I used to be Sankofa Juma, Sankofa Juma, the work
right.
of restoration. Yeah, I was just before I even called in, I was on that, and I was, you know, taking, I take a lot of notes, man. I take a whole lot of notes. But I don't want to take up too much of your time with my comments, and I want you to, you know, carry on. But I would like to say that to individuals, you know, I may have some family members who may be incarcerated, brothers who may be incarcerated. How would you suggest that brothers who are incarcerated, you know, study the knowledge?
Well, one thing we can do, like, for example, somebody asked us to send some publications to one of their family members who's incarcerated. So, you know, we can do that because, you know, some institutions, they only allow people to get books if they're coming from an organization.
Yeah.
Some of them only allow it if it's coming from Amazon. But then some allow it if it's coming from some kind of publisher or some kind of business. So, we can do that. Just, you know, let us know, send us an email, you know, let us know what's going on, and we can see what we can work out with regard to that information. Or one thing that some people would do is, since, like you said, you've seen the PDF, so for people who don't know, we have 12 books. 7 of them are in soft cover, as well as we have all of them are PDF ebooks, and the ebooks versions of all our 12 books are free. But then 7 of them are also in soft cover, which we sell. We print them ourselves on our own printers in color, so we do sell those. What some people have done is they will download some of the articles PDF, and then they would just print them out and send them in the form of a letter. So they may send a 2 or 3 page article, or they will send, you know, a 6 page article, or you know, a couple of letters back to back with, you know, they'll end up sending the whole article, or sometimes they may end up sending a series of letters, and it turns out they sent the whole book. So some people have done it that way. But just send us an email, and then, you know, just let us know, you know, what's going on, and we'll see how we can work that out.
Excellent.
Okay, Merasa, we appreciate the call.
Appreciate you too, bro.
Okay, Merasa, for your support. Okay, so we, and that's important. The brother brought up the Gullah Geechee Nation, which is in, you know, the Sea Islands, South Carolina, so forth, sacred land. They maintain many of their traditional practices. There's some corruption with Christianity, but then some people don't embrace that as well. They're, you know, still embrace traditional religion down there. There are many Congo people, Igbo, of course, Yoruba, but there are Khan as well who are in that region. There are people who've done studies linguistically and shown connections where you find a series of Akan words and Yoruba words and Igbo words and Congo words all in the Gullah Geechee dialect. So, of course, people from Angola and things like that. So, and that is a sacred area. And we do plan, as soon as we can, we want to get down there and do some workshops, presentations, you know, on more than one occasion. So we want to, we definitely want to do that. And we, that's definitely in the plan. So just hit us up about that as well. Okay. So there was a question here. He said, who are the 42 deities in the Confessions of Innocence? So if you look in the various forms of the text, Pert Imheru, Runu Pert Imheru, Book of Coming Forth by Day, the quickest one, quickest reference that you can download, and you can download it for free, you can download the Papyrus of Ani, but you can download the Papyrus of Hunefer as well, and different papyri, but you can definitely download the Papyrus of Ani, because very often you can find a translation and transliteration there. And then the entire list of the divinities is in the text. So it's not just when it talks about the 42 divinities. In fact, let us, for a second, real quick, for people who haven't seen the text before or haven't read the text before, I'll pull a copy out that I have, and then maybe if you have the text, or if you download the free text, you'll know where to check it out. You know where to look. So this particular one is the Papyrus of Ani, the Shef Ani. So in that particular papyrus, page 31, you'll find it on page 31. Now, on page 31 is where it begins invoking the 42 Abosom by name consistence, one after the other. Prior to that is where the other information is, which is just as important. So, for example, page 31, it says, Hail Strider coming forth from Anu, I have not done wrong. Hail, meaning that's an invocation. When they say Strider, Usetch, that's the name of the divinity coming forth from Anu, coming forth from the city or region of Anu, I have not done wrong or engaged in Isfet, which means disorder. So it invoked the divinity Usetch. The next divinity, it says, Hail, Hepet, embraced with flame, coming forth from Kerhaba, I have not despoiled, meaning despoiled the offering. The despoiling offerings that are given to divinities, like food offerings and spoiling them, that's a taboo. That's Echiwadie, Akan term for taboo, divinely prohibited. Ewa in Yoruba, divinely prohibited, and so forth. So what in this section, every line is very similar. It's an invocation, the name of the divinity, where the divinity comes from, the sacred city or nome or region of the divinity, and what thing they have not done. So you invoke the divinity, that force of nature, to fuse with that force of nature, which is an embodiment of divine order, so you can harmonize with the order in creation. So you accept the energy of that divinity through invocation. But then at the same time, you also then say what you have not done. You also talk about what you have repelled that would otherwise be out of harmony with that divinity. So you'll talk about what you invoke the divinity to incorporate what you harmonize with, but you also demonstrate what you have rejected. So just like you can tell somebody you only eat certain foods and you don't do drugs. So you don't just talk about you eat the food, you actually consume the food that's nourishing to you, vitamins, minerals, and things like that in natural foods and so forth. You actually consume those. But then if somebody comes and tries to give you some drugs or set some drugs in front of you, you reject that. So you invoke the divinity and you infuse the actual fuel, the energy that's streaming from the divinity ritually. When you engage them ritually, their energy is projected. You receive that and internalize it and align with it. But you also exercise your power to repel that repulsive energy you have, and you repel any disorder that will come with that. So those 42, starting on plate 31, they go through the various divinities, their names, they invoke them by name. That invocation is a ritual prayer. If you stand before a shrine today and you go to a shrine of an Orisha, a shrine of an Abosom, and you ritually invoke them through ritual prayer or ritual song, you're calling or invoking, provoking the energy of that Abosom to come to you. And if you're in harmony with order, they will come to you because it's a harmonious situation. They're not just obedient slaves. They follow the dictates of the Supreme Being. So if you harmonize with the culture and harmonize with them ritually in a harmonious fashion, then the Supreme Being will direct them to come to you. So that's a ritual invocation, and that force in nature comes into the room and may possess or come and take up residence at the shrine. That's the invocation. You align with that force. But you also demonstrate what you repel so that your thoughts, intentions, and actions can be pure and clear. So that's play 31 going through that. But prior to that, before you get to that, if you go back a few pages, for example, let's go back because there's an appendix here because he added a couple of appendixes just to show some people. There's comparisons between different texts, like if they were missing a piece of the text or it was damaged, and they were put in an appendix from another text that mirrored this text, so they have a few of those. So I just want to show a portion of the section just so you can see what we're talking about. Okay, for example, and we'll just read it in English. It says, to be said when one comes to the hall, Sech Tun Nt Maasi, or the hall, the double hall of Ma'at, separating one from sins or disorder, all that one has done, and seeing the deity and all the faces of the divinity. So it says, Anchia Ntoro'a, which means greetings, the great divinity, Neb Ma'ati, Lord of the double hall of Ma'at, I have come to you, my Neb means Lord, Master, and so forth. I brought myself that I may see your harmony or beauty. I know you. I know the name of the deities, the 42 deities who exist with you in this hall of Ma'ati, of this double hall of Ma'ati. Those 42 divinities who live as the punishers of disorder, those who pervade disorder, quote-unquote sinners or criminals, those who live upon their blood, on the day that of computing dispositions before Neferu. So it's talking about the 42 deities who punish criminals, individuals who are engaged in disorder and who live upon their blood, just like the lioness rips apart the enemy, the hyena, and lives upon their blood. They show like Sekhmet and different divinities attacking individuals who are engaged in disorder, physically as well as those spirits who are engaged in disorder. So saying, living upon their blood, the 42 deities who are the judges of Ma'at and Ma'ah, they are punishers of those who are engaged in disorder and live upon their blood, means they destroy them and so forth. He says, I have come to you, I have brought to you Ma'at as an offering, meaning divine law and balance. I have driven away from you Isfet, disorder. I have not done Isfet or disorder to mankind, meaning Afurakani, Afurakani people. I have not done harm to animals. I have not done wickedness in the place of Ma'at. I have not known evil. I have not acted wickedly. I have not done each and every day the works above which I should do. He goes through a number of different things that he has not engaged in. And then there's a number of them. So then he asks, not let any evil be done to me in this land, in the fall of double Ma'at, because I know I know the names of these deities, these 42 deities who are in this divine hall of Ma'at, who are followers of you, the great God, the N'Toro'a. And then once he invokes, and he's talking to Asar, Asar sitting on the throne, he is the sovereign of the ancestral realm, the spirit realm, and Aset and Nebihet are with him, and they are female sovereigns of the spirit realm as well. So when we make our transition, they run the spirit realm. So first he addresses Asar and said he has come through this hall of Ma'at. Asar is the presiding judge, so to speak. The 42 divinities are like the 42 people of the jury, so to speak. But Asar is the presiding judge. Person's heart is balanced against a feather eventually to see if it harmonizes with that light energy. It's not weighed down by disorder or criminality and so forth. So first he addresses Asar. He says, I've come to this hall of double Ma'at. I have not engaged in these negative practices, so please do not allow me to be repelled from the ancestral realm. And as proof of that, he has to go before each one of the 42 divinities and invoke them and harmonize his energy with theirs. If he cannot, then it demonstrates that he was not living in harmony with them while he was on earth. Because if he was, then his spirit would be pure enough to harmonize with their energy, and he wouldn't be repelled by them. So he goes to each one of these divinities and invokes them. Just like here in America, when we go to our ancestral ritual and there are shrines for different abosom, we go to each shrine and invoke the divinity and salute the divinity of each shrine. If somebody goes to each shrine of an Orisha and they do an invocation or harmonize a salute with each shrine, they'll go to the shrine of Obatala if it's there, go to the shrine of Eshu, invoke him there, and go from each one. Just like we do on earth, we do in the ancestral realm as well, because these same divinities are governing both places. All right. So that's one piece. We have 8 minutes left on the live stream, so if you want to continue to listen on the live stream, I'm sorry, if you want to continue to listen to the show, we'll go a little bit into overtime because we're going to deal with the Moses character right quick. Then you can, you know, listen on the phone. You have to call in, though, 657-383-0635, if you want to continue to listen to the show after 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is 7 minutes from now. The live stream will cut off, but those who are on the phone, they will be able to continue to listen. 657-383-0635 is the phone number, and you just call and you can listen in. All right, so you guys, what is the name and command for the judgment scene? So it's the Usechi is the hall, and Ma'ati is the double hall of the double. Ma'ati is a term, is a suffix denoting duality in this sense. So, and then they also show two cobras representing female divinity, so the hall of double Ma'at. Usechi Ma'ati, or the hall, or Usechi Ma'ati, the hall of the double Ma'at, that's what they call it. And that's where that the judgment takes place. The judgment itself, often you'll see Ucha Medu, which is like the weighing of the word. And so you'll find that in different texts as well. Okay, so to get to this, the Moses piece, and this you can find in the Kuku Tun Tun. We go into detail about that when we're talking about the origin of the names Abraham, Isaac, and Ishmael, as well as Moses and Aaron. When you go on the Kuku Tun Tun, we deal with that specifically with the Moses piece on beginning on page 38 in the Kuku Tun Tun of the Ancestral Jurisdiction. Now, you can read through that, and it goes into detail, and it's the narrative just goes through the detail. Where the text was taken from, when we talk about Tahuti. One of the titles of Tahuti is Ma'a-Sher. Ma'a-Sher or Ma'a-Sheru sometimes is written. He is the original Ma'a-Sheru or Ma'a-Sher because Ma'a means true, law, order, upright, balance, and so forth. Ma'a, just like Ma'at. And then Sher means voice or word. So Ma'a-Sher means true of voice, true of word, one who speaks the divine law. Tahuti is the mouthpiece or spokesperson of Amen and Amenet, of Ra, of Ra'et, the spokesperson of the divinity. Just like in our Khan culture, you see the Oheni and the Ohema, the king, queen, mother, sitting on their Edua or Egua thrones, and then you'll see somebody standing next to them with a very tall staff. That is the Ocheame. That is the spokesperson. You don't speak directly to the king and queen mother. You speak to the spokesperson. Then he relays your message to the king and queen mother, and they speak back to him, and then he speaks to you. The same structure comes directly from Kemet. The Ocheame comes from the Uheme, which is a title of Tahuti, which means one who repeats or speaks or records the words and repeats them. It's the exact same term from Kemet. It's the exact same function that Tahuti holds when he stands as the spokesperson or the repeater or messenger in that sense of Amen, Amenet, Ron Ryder, and so forth. And he stands there with the staff as well. So he speaks the divine law. He is the spokesperson of the divine law on the male side, Tahuti. The female divinity, Tekit or Seshat, the female scribe, divine wisdom, divinity, she is the spokesperson on the female side. Just like we have male Ocheame or Acheame in our Khan culture, spokespersons. The queen mother, she has a number of female Acheame or female spokespersons. So you will find Tahuti and Seshat, or Sesh and Seshat. Sesh can mean scribe. Seshat is female for scribe. So you sometimes Tahuti is called Sesh or the great Sesh. Sesh and Seshat, Tahuti and Tekit, male and female forces of divine wisdom, the spokesperson of the divinity. This is why it's called Ma'al-Sher, and then he has the capacity to make others Ma'al-Sher. So in the prayers, in the Medutu, in the, for example, in the Pert and Meru, Book of Coming Forth by Day, you'll find that they add Tahuti to make them Ma'al-Sher, just like he made Asar Ma'al-Sher, true of voice, true of word. When you pass the test of the weighing of the heart and you go through the hall of the double Ma'ati, then, and you pass that test of the weighing of the heart, then you are declared by Tahuti, who is standing there and he's taking note of the weighing. You're declared true of word and you become Ma'al-Sher. This is where they get the term Ma'al-Sher or Moshe or Moses from. Tahuti is the original Ma'al-Sher or true of voice, true of word, speaker of the divine law of Ma'al. Now, in the book of the Kal of Heaven, you will find this information. Ra directs Tahuti. He tells him to come up to the mountainous region because he wants to communicate with Tahuti out of the view of the people. Ra then takes the form of a divine light. He is called Ra-Aku, meaning Ra, the illuminated one. So Tahuti, Ma'al-Sher, goes up on the mountain to talk to the God who takes the form of a divine light. Moshe goes on the mountain to talk to the God in the form of the burning bush or the divine light. The Ra, as Ra-Aku, tells Tahuti that he is going to take his place because Ra is going further up the heavenly realm, and he's going to dwell there, and he's going to make Tahuti his representative in his place as the head of creation with regard to human beings and their association with Ra and Ra'at and so forth. He calls him Asti Ra, meaning he's taken the seat, Asti of Ra, and he's going to take his place. But he also says, in the process, I'm going to give you an assistant to assist you in that process. that assistant is that divinity that you see on page 42, dog-headed baboon, which in the text, the Book of the Cow of Heaven, is referred to as Anan, A-N-A-N. So Moshe gets an assistant, a spokesperson, a messenger for himself, since he's going to be taking the place of Ra as a representative of Ra in the world, then he's given an assistant as well, a little messenger, the dog-headed baboon called Anan. So Moshe or Moshe gets Anan. This is Moshe and Aaron, or Moses and Aaron, or Moses and Aaron. This is where they get that from. This is why Aaron was, you know, given to be the messenger of Moshe. Ra tells Tehuti that he is going to make a land, a promised area. It is called the Sekhet Hetep. Sekhet means field. Hetep means peace, the divine fields of peace. That is a title of the ancestral realm. It is a divine field that the ancestresses and ancestors will take up residence in when they have passed that scale of Maat. They balance their heart against the feather. They've invoked the 42 divinities, harmonized with them, demonstrated their harmony with them. Now they can go to the ancestral realm. He establishes, Ra establishes the ancestral realm. He makes this land for the followers of Tehuti to dwell in. It is called Sekhet Hetep, or the divine field of peace. And within that field, he puts Arat, or Aru, which is divine herbs, divine food, in the divine field. And only the followers of Tehuti, the divinity of divine wisdom, only they can end up in the Sekhet Hetep, or the ancestral realm, when they make their transition. People who are not living in harmony with divine order, as we said before, they become repulsive, and therefore they'll end up earthbound and caught up in all kinds of nonsense for generations. But those who follow Tehuti, follow the spokesperson of divine wisdom, then they are promised this land, the Sekhet Hetep, this divine field with the divine food and the divine land. This is the creator, this is the deity who manifested on the mountain in the form of a divine light, in the burning bush, telling his new assistant, Moshe, giving him a messenger, Aaron or Aaron, and saying, we're going to give you a promised land, a land with divine food, food from heaven, the milk and honey falling from heaven, and the land of milk and honey and all of this nonsense. Tehuti operates through the moon. We show that in the text. Ra operates through the sun and uses the sun as a physical transmitter, as well as other stars, of his spiritual energy. That moon and sun, Tehuti operating through the moon is known as Yah in Kemet. So Tehuti takes on the title sometimes Yah Tehuti. It's also pronounced Yahu or Yahu, I-A-H-W, Yahu. Bird that Tehuti takes the form of, the crane-headed divinity that they call the ibis in Kemet, and in the Coptic dialect is Habwi, H-A-B-U-I, Habwi. So Yah Tehuti and Yau Tehuti is also called Habwi. This is where you get Yahweh from. Yah becomes Jah in the Bible, and this is where you get that from. But Habwe is the divinity operating through the moon. The entire story is taken directly from the Book of the Cow of Heaven, also called The Destruction of Mankind, which you can download that text anywhere on the internet. You can download the translation, transliteration. But in that text, this is where you get the name of the divinity, but Tehuti is operating through the moon. He's not a white male or a black male walking around in Palestine. Tehuti operates through the moon. Uses the moon as a physical transmitter of his spiritual energy, and the moon is called Yah. Ra uses the sun as a physical transmitter of his spiritual energy. So when the sun tells the moon to come up in the mountainous region, just like they would see at night, sun sets in the mountainous range, in the western mountain range, Manu, in the Amenset, the land of the west, the moon rises from the same region. So there's an interaction, a conjunction between the sun and the moon. Come with me to the mountainous region. the divinity operating through the form of a divine light. It's Ra Aku, that divinity, the divine light, tells the other divine light, the moon, come to me to this mountainous region. Exchange, I'm going to give you some of my energy. You're going to rule in my stead. The sun sets. But what is the light that rules instead in the stead of the sun when the sun is gone? It's the second light in the heavens, of course, it's the moon. The Yah, the moon, Yah Tuhuti. So he gives him his place in the world, but he also establishes, even though the sun is set, a divine field of peace, Seketetep, and puts food therein. And then he says, I'm going to put all kinds of stars therein, Ashesha, which he puts the stars in divine field of peace. It shows that it's talking about the ancestral realm. He establishes the promised land for the followers of Moshe and Aaron, or Moses and Aaron, Tehuti and Anan, the crane-headed divinity and the baboon-headed divinity, the dog-headed baboon divinity. These are forces in nature operating through the moon and the sun. And, of course, they also operate, Tehuti operates through the pineal gland in the body of Asurakani, Afurakani people. Ra operates through the divine living energy that's operating through your bloodstream consistently and circulating through your body at all times, Ra and Ra'at. So spirits that are animating the moon, animating the sun, when they connect, when the sun sets, the moon takes its place, becomes the Asti Ra, or sits in the seat of Ra in the sky, is the light in the heavens that directs people and guides people in the darkness. Moshe is the guide in the wilderness, the whole piece. The food from heaven, the milk and honey in the divine land, the lunar light coming from the moon in the darkness is the milk coming from heaven. The lunar light is the milky light coming from the moon. The solar light is the honey, the golden light coming from the sun. This is the land of milk and honey coming from Tehuti and Ra, Moshe, and the creative spirit, Ra, Ra, who took the form of a divine light. So that entire story, we address that, showing this is where it comes from. Now, also in the Akan tradition, which just confirms that as well, they'll talk about the pathway to the ancestral realm is through a mountain. And when you pass over that mountain, then you can get to the ancestral realm. It's like a gateway to the ancestral realm. In ancient Kemet, the western mountain range called Manu is the gateway to the ancestral realm. It said when people make their transition in a harmonious way, then that white clay, that shidel that people put on the dead person's body, that white powdery clay substance, some of that is used and is scattered across the sky and lights up the sky, and the person therefore has a pathway in the darkness to get to the ancestral realm. And that pathway is lightened by that white clay. That pathway is actually the Milky Way, the divine heavenly Nile in the sky that lights up the sky. So when Ra talks about establishing the Seketetep, which is actually the term for the ancestral realm, putting food therein and all kinds of stars, the black substance of space, a great black field. He puts the divine food, the various stars that light up the black substance, and also the Milky Way, the divine food from heaven, and so forth. And it is the gateway through the mountain range that the ancestresses and ancestors make their way to after their transition. When the sun sets, we are living suns, as they say in the Congo tradition. When our sun sets, just like when the sun sets and goes underground, our bodies go into the ground and our spirits disembark from our bodies, just like people disembarking from a boat, a vessel, and then we go into the ancestral realm. And we go into that divine field that was laid out for us by Ra. Only if we were living in harmony with divine wisdom, followers of Tehuti, Moshe, and Aaron, while we were living our everyday lives and we were living in harmony with the 42 assessors of Ma'at and Ma'ah when we were living on earth, then we can prove that we were able to harmonize with them after our transition, then we can make it to the Seketetep, the divine field of peace. The whites and the offspring took that information, corrupted the title of Tehuti from Ma'sher, Ma'sheru, Ma'sher to Ma'she, corrupted Aaron into Aaron or Aaron, said they were white males walking around in Palestine after leaving Kemet with a multitude of people. Went up on the mountain, talked to the God in the form of divine light, was given the divine law. Of course, Tehuti is the scribe of the divine law. You see him with his pen, with his writing instrument, scribing the divine law. He is the divine scribe on the male side, the sesh, and then seshat or tekit is the female divine scribe. So when they talk about the Ten Commandments, it is Ra who directs Tehuti to write down the divine laws that exist in the universe. He is the divine scribe. So when Tehuti or Moshe receives the Ten Commandments, he's the divine scribe with the palate. You see Tehuti, or mispronounced Thoth, with his palate, his divine palate, and he's writing. He's the divine scribe. And he's the patron male divinity of all scribes, just like Seshat is the patron female divinity of all scribes and libraries. So you see that entire structure coming from directly from the text, but however they will take forces in nature operating through the sun and the moon, make them white human beings and stick them in Palestine, then try to create a blood lineage to a fictional character who never existed, and then say that the supreme or the creator chose them, the fictional characters that never existed, and everybody who's descended from them are the chosen people of the God. And then idiots in our community want to blacken up fictional characters who never lived in Palestine ever. There was no Moses, there was no, Aaron, there were no ancient Israelites, there were no Hebrews. That is true historical fiction, all of it, and it's lifted from these texts. And they will try to trace a bloodline to fictional characters no different than tracing the bloodline to the Tooth Fairy or Kris Kringle and creating a whole culture, subculture, around imitating the whites and their offspring and blackening up nonsense. Blackening up white perversions of fragments of our culture. In the text, in the portion of our book prior to this, we go into detail about Abraham, Isaac, and Ishmael, showing that Abraham or Ibrahim is a corruption of the title of Tehuti, Iprehui, which means judge of the two combatants, and he's the judge between Heru and Set, who are fighting about who's going to be the next heir to the throne of Asar. Heru is called Shet, which means ruler in ancient Kemet. Set is called Smai-Ur. Shet and Smai-Ur becomes Ishek and Ismail in Arabic. So Ibrahim, Ishek and Ismail comes from Iprehui, which is Tehuti, Shet and Smai-Ur, which is Heru and Set. So we go into detail about that, showing that this divinity, Tehuti, one of his titles, Iprehui, was corrupted into Ibrahim, by the whites and their offspring. One of his titles, Ma'al Sher, meaning true of word, and his function as a spokesperson of Ra and Ra'et was corrupted into Moshe, and his association with Aran, the dog-headed baboon, was corrupted into Moses and Aaron, and a whole story was created about a fictional group of people who never existed. And the whole piece about the lawgiver and so forth, that comes directly from Tehuti's function as the divine scribe of Ma'at. And you will also find in ancient Kemet, he will sometimes be paired with Ma'at, Tehuti and Ma'at, as husband and wife, also on the front of the boat of Ra, when the boat of Ra rises for the first time. So this is the association with Tehuti being the divine scribe of Ma'at, the scribe of Ma'at and Ma'al, meaning divine law. So Moshe is the scribe of the divine law. Moshe receives the divine law. Moshe is the lawgiver. Moshe speaks the divine law. He's a spokesman for the divinity. He's also the scribe of the divine law. This is where the theft comes from. There's also more in the text of the Book of the Cow of Heaven talking about how Ra directs, gives the earth divinity to survey the different serpents and other entities within his body, which is the crust of the earth, but then he also tells him to place those individuals who have knowledge of divine words of power in their bodies and whose mouths speak these divine words, which are the divine words and powers of Ra, those individuals, males and females, put them under the jurisdiction of Asar. This is the establishment of a priesthood. This is the establishment of the Levite Mosaic priesthood that they stole from the Book of the Cow of Heaven. When Ra directs Tehuti to call on Geb, Geb comes forth. He directs Geb to put all the people who have the divine words of power, that capacity to wield that divine energy, because they were born into the world to serve as vessels of the Abosom, the priests, the priestesses, the Okonpo, Abosompo, Babalaos, and so forth, Olorishas, in these various traditions. They have that capacity. That's their function. They are under the jurisdiction of Asar. That's stated in the text, and this is where they get the Levitical priesthood from. So we go into, of course, great detail within the Kukuzun tomb about that, but we show that contrast to show, number one, Moses and Aaron and all these characters did not exist. They were not black. They were not white. Tehuti is a force in nature. All of the Abosom are forces in nature. They're not human beings who later spiritually ascended to adepts and masters and mahatmas and nonsense like that. They're not just deified ancestresses and ancestors. That is not who they are. That is not who the Orisha are. That's not who the Vodou are. That is not who the Abosom are. That is not who the Ntorutu are. They are not just ancestresses and ancestors. Only people who teach that are people who are infected with the foolishness of the whites and their offspring. So they bring that infection to ancestral religion and try to couch it in the terms of our ancestral religious tradition. They are enamored with the whites and their offspring. They never left the building. They never left them alone. So they become well-versed in the language and culture and outer accoutrements of traditional religion, whether they are in this part of the world or if they're on the continent. They've been infected with Islam for over 1,000 years. They've been infected with Christianity for over 100 years, some of them a couple of 100 years. So some of them have brought those infections into the culture. And they have woven them into the culture. So they'll say things like, oh, the Orisha are just deified ancestors. That's totally inaccurate. They'll say that, oh, the Abosom are just deified ancestors. Totally inaccurate. The people who know no better than that, and they would never say that. There's a smaller percentage of people who have been infected by the whites and their offspring who teach that nonsense on the continent as well as over here. If you actually deal with the Abosom, if they possess, communicate with you directly, and you actually deal with Tehuti, you actually deal with Tekit, deal with Ma'at, deal with Ma'at, deal with these 42 Abosom, these 42 divinities on a consistent basis, and any Afurakani, Afurakaini person can do that because we're connected to them, then you will actually know the difference between the forces of nature and their function in creation. And us as human beings, Afurakani, Afurakaitini only, of course, human beings, and our specific function as human beings in creation. We have a specific function as Afurakani, Afurakaitini people, which is different from that of forces in nature. So Tehuti and Anan and these various forces, they are not individuals. They are not black individuals who are walking around in Palestine. They are not black individuals who are walking around in Kemet. Yes, they will possess people ritually, and then they could walk around, of course. They will manifest spiritually, and people can see the forces of nature just like they can see them at the shrines today. But they were not just people walking around, and later on they became honored as heroes and later ancestors and later deities. That's foolish. So we just wanted to compare the difference between the actual text, the cosmology, and then what the whites and their offspring teach. Also, with regard to what are the 42 enunciations of Ma'at, what are they actually tied to? And they, of course, they are tied to the invocation of 42 divinities. If you're not invoking them, and if somebody's just reading some 42 quote-unquote commandments, then you're not really engaged in the culture. If you're not in the process of invoking these Abosom, then you're not engaged in the culture. It's just repeating nonsense that came from the Europeans and trying to blacken it up. All we have to do is, number one, if we want to research this information, the most extensive record of religious ritual practice, prayers, and so forth is found in ancient Kemet. And, of course, there are translations and everything else. We can confirm our translations by learning the language ourselves, but utilizing the languages that exist today from our people, Akan, Yoruba, Ebe, Igbo, various languages to confirm these because the languages are related. They're directly derived from that ancient language, which goes back, according to our own ancestresses and ancestors' recording, over 42,000 years. In the papyrus of Turin, they talk about the establishment of the civilization going back 42,000 years. People, of course, lived before that. As far as the establishment of a monarchy and establishment of that kind of government over 42,000 years ago, according to our own people's own recording. Of course, that includes the language. So our language is thousands of years old, and these various languages that exist on the continent today are directly descendant from that ancient language. So you can look at the Akan, Yoruba, Ebe, and various languages and translate accurately the language of ancient Khmer and the proper items and the various names of divinities and so forth. And the cosmology is still alive because the deities live through not only the physical aspects of nature, but they also animate us as well and connect with us as well. So we want to learn something about Tehuti, we invoke Tehuti. We want to learn something about Aset, we invoke Aset or Ajua. We want to learn something about Heru, we invoke Heru. Akan, we call him Yao, but also Soro, which is Horo or Heru as well. So this is direct experiential knowledge of these divinities. Okay, so it looks like we don't have any more calls, comments, so we're going to end here. It's about 11:21. We will be back on tomorrow for Egua Marketplace Day. We will send out a reminder for that. Check the website, 9 p.m. once again. For those individuals who came on a little bit later, we did move up the date for the presentation that we originally had scheduled for this Saturday. That date has been moved up. We will confirm it in the next day or so. Most likely it will be August 16th. So instead of July 19th, 4 weeks later, August 16th. So that's the date for Las Vegas, Nevada. It won't be this Saturday, Namenadai. It will most likely be 4 weeks later on August 16th. We had to reschedule. So we will confirm the actual date and time within the next couple of days and let everybody know. So check the website as well. For those who want to be distributors of our soft cover publications, go to ojidafo.com/nhomai, nhoma.html. You can purchase the journals wholesale, and then you can sell them retail as an entrepreneurial endeavor for yourself. We also have, we sell the publications, the soft cover versions of publications as well. They only range between $8 and $11. This is the way that we fund our operations, the way we are able to do presentations for free in the various cities that we've gone to, Philadelphia, Virginia, Tennessee, Texas, North Carolina, Louisiana, the various different places we've gone. Just this past week in Baltimore, the week before that we were in Connecticut. Everywhere we go, when we do presentations, workshops, speak for a couple of hours, have hours of question and answer after that. We always have the presentations are always free. We do not charge our people to come in. And we always give away a free copy of one of our soft cover books so that we can get this information to our people. So in order for us to be able to continue to do that and cover our expenses, we sell the soft cover versions of our books, although the PDF versions of the books are free. Some people like the soft cover versions. Some people purchase the soft cover versions, even though they have the free PDF, but they would like to support our endeavors, and they can share the soft cover versions with their family and friends and so forth. The books are in color, so they sell themselves. When they see the images, people, you know, they really appreciate that, and it draws them into the material. So if you would like to support our efforts, you can go to our website, go to the Nhoma page, the publications page. You can purchase any one of the 7 books between $8 and $11. We appreciate that. You can make a donation if you want. You can make a recurring donation as well. PayPal has that. Some people have made like a $10 recurring donation, so it's an automatic $10 donation every month, and that helps us. And if you make a $15 recurring donation or just one donation, but whether it's one donation or recurring, $15 or more, we're going to send you a book anyway. So even though it was a donation, we'll still send you a book. And if you make it recurring, if you click the recurring box then what we'll do is we'll send you, you know, one book per month for the next, you know, however many months that you continue the recurring piece. We have 7 books out now. We will have more out soon, so within the next couple of months, we're going to have a few more books. So if you make a recurring donation, you have at least 12 books. Once a month, you'll get a new book every month for the next 12 months if you do it that way. Okay, so it looks like we have one more call. We're going to take one more call. Okay, Michiawo, 1613, you have a question, comment?
What's up, Brother Crazy? Yeah, I guess I could. I heard you mention that you were coming to Philly, and do you have a location at this point, or?
There's going to be a festival coming up in a few weeks, so we're looking at attending that festival. We didn't have a specific location with regard to, you know, setting aside a location to speak, but we're looking at that particular festival. But we do also, in addition to that, we do want to do a presentation in Philly. So let me know what's going on with that, and we can make it back out there.
Okay, I'll try to I'll connect with the location, Songhai City Cultural Center, and see if we can bring you on for a session there. That would be great. Okay. All right, I appreciate that.
Okay, so that, building on that as well, if you want us to come do a presentation in your city, in your area, we do presentations for small groups as well as large groups, of course. So just send us an email, go to the website, og.fo.com, to the contact us section, and we will be, you know, we will be going to different places in different areas. We want to connect, of course, with our people wherever our people are in the country, of course, outside of the country as well. So we'll be getting to the West Coast soon. We've been on the East Coast. We're going to be in the Midwest, in the South. So, so just hit us up if you want to make that happen. OG.fo.com, go to the contact us section and just send us an email, and we'll get right back with you. All right, so may I say, we thank you for everyone coming and tuning in, and we will be back on tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Egua Marketplace, and we will be sending updates on that by tomorrow morning. All right, that's up.